Chapter 12, Inside Information. For a long time, the dwarf stood in the dark before the door and debated, until at last Thorin spoke. "Now is the time for our esteemed Mr. Baggins, who has proved himself a good companion on our long road, and a hobbit full of courage and resource far exceeding his size. And if I may say so, possessed of good luck, far exceeding the usual allowance. Now is the time for him to perform the service for which he was included in our company. Now is the time for him to earn his reward. You are familiar with Thorin's style on important occasions, so I will not give you any more of it. Though he went on a good deal longer than this, it certainly was an important occasion, but Bilbo felt impatient. By now he was quite familiar with Thorin too, and he knew what he was driving at. If you mean you think it is my job to go into the secret passage first, oh Thorin, Thrain's son, Oakenshield, may your beard grow ever longer," he said crossly. "Say so at once and have done. I might refuse. I've got you out of two messes already, which were hardly in the original bargain, so that I am, I think, already owed some reward. But third time pays for all, as my father used to say, and somehow I don't think I shall refuse. Perhaps I've begun to trust my luck more than I used to in the old days." He meant last spring before he left his own house, but it seemed centuries ago. "But anyway, I think I will go and have a peep at once and get it over. Now who is coming with me?" He did not expect a chorus of volunteers, so he was not disappointed. Feely and Keely looked uncomfortable and stood on one leg, but the others made no pretence of offering, except old Barlin, the lookout man, who was rather fond of the hobbit. He said he would come inside at least, and perhaps a bit of the way too, ready to call for help if necessary. The most that can be said for the dwarves is this: they intended to pay Bilbo really handsomely for his services. They had brought him to do a nasty job for them, and they did not mind the poor little fellow doing it if he would. But they would have done their best to get him out of trouble, if he got into it, as they did in the case of the trolls at the beginning of their adventures, before they had any particular reasons for being grateful to him. There it is. Dwarves are not heroes, but calculating folk with a great idea of the value of money. Some are tricky and treacherous and pretty bad lots. Some are not, but are decent people like Thorin and company if you don't expect too much. The stars were coming out behind him in a pale sky barred with black when the hobbit crept through the enchanted door and stole into the mountain. It was far easier going than he expected. This was no goblin entrance or rough wood elves cave. It was a passage made by dwarves at the height of their wealth and skill, straight as a ruler, smooth floored and smooth sided, going with a gentle, never varying slope, direct to some distant end in the blackness below. After a while, Barlin bade Bilbo good luck and stopped where he could still see the faint outline of the door, and by a trick of the echoes of the tunnel, hear the rustle of the whispering voices of the others just outside. Then the hobbit slipped on his ring and warned by the echoes to take more than hobbits care to make no sound, he crept noiselessly down, down, down into the dark. He was trembling with fear, but his little face was set and grim. Already he was a very different hobbit from the one that had run out without a pocket handkerchief from Bag End long ago. He had not had a pocket handkerchief for ages. He loosened his dagger in its sheath, tightened his belt and went on. "Now you are in for it at last, Bilbo Baggins," he said to himself. "You went and put your foot right in it that night of the party, and now you have got to pull it out and pay for it." "Dear me, what a fool I was and am," said the least tookish part of him. "I have absolutely no use for dragon-guarded treasures, and the whole lot could stay here forever if only I could wake up and find this beastly tunnel was my own front hall at home. He did not wake up, of course, but went still on and on till all sign of the door behind had faded away. He was altogether alone. Soon he thought it was beginning to feel warm. Is that a kind of glow I seem to see coming right ahead down there? He thought. It was. As he went forward, it grew and grew till there was no doubt about it. It was a red light, steadily getting redder and redder. It is now undoubtedly hot in the tunnel. Wisps of vapour floated up and past him, and he began to sweat. A sound, too, began to throb in his ears, a sort of bubbling like the noise of a large pot galloping on the fire, mixed with a rumble as of a gigantic tomcat purring. This grew to the unmistakable gurgling noise of some vast animal snoring in its sleep down there in the red glow in front of him. It was at this point that Bilbo stopped. Going on from there was the bravest thing he ever did. The tremendous things that happened afterwards were as nothing compared to it. He fought the real battle in the tunnel alone before he ever saw the vast danger that lay in wait. At any rate, after a short halt, go on he did, and you can picture him coming to the end of the tunnel and opening of much the same size and shape as the door above. Through it peeps the hobbit's little head. Before him lies the great bottommost cellar or dungeon hall of the ancient dwarves right at the mountain's root. It is almost dark, so that its vastness can only be dimly guessed, but rising from the near side of the rocky floor, there is a great glow, the glow of Smaug. There he lay, a vast red golden dragon, fast asleep. A thrumming came from his jaws and nostrils and wisps of smoke, but his fires were low in slumber. Beneath him, under all his limbs and his huge coiled tail, and about him on all sides stretching away across the unseen floors, lay countless piles of precious things, gold wrought and unwrought, gems and jewels and silver red-stained in the ruddy light. Smaug lay with wings folded like an immeasurable bat, turned partly on one side so that the hobbit could see his underparts and his long pale belly crusted with gems and fragments of gold from his long lying on his costly bed. Behind him, where the walls were nearest, could dimly be seen coats of mail, helms and axes, swords and spears hanging, and there in rows stood great jars and vessels filled with a wealth that could not be guessed. To say that Bilbo's breath was taken away is no description at all. There are no words left to express his staggerment, since men changed the language that they learnt of elves in the days when all the world was wonderful. Bilbo had heard tell and sing of dragon halls before, but the splendour, the lust, the glory of such treasure had never yet come home to him. His heart was filled and pierced with enchantment and with the desire of dwarves, and he gazed motionless about, almost forgetting the frightful guardian, at the gold beyond price and count. He gazed for what seemed an age before, drawn almost against his will, he stole from the window of the doorway across the floor to the nearest edge of the mounds of treasure. Above him the sleeping dragon lay, a dire menace in his sleep. He grasped a great two-handled cup as heavy as he could carry and cast one fearful eye upwards. Smaug stirred a wing, opened a claw, the rumble of his snoring changed its note. Then Bilbo fled. But the dragon did not wake, not yet, but shifted into other dreams of greed and violence, lying there in his stolen hall while the little hobbit tore back up the long tunnel. His heart was beating and a more fevered shaking was in his legs than when he was going down, but still he clutched the cup and his chief thought was, I've done it, this will show him, more like a grocer than a burglar, indeed. Well, we'll hear no more of that. Nor did he. Balin was overjoyed to see the hobbit again and as delighted as he was surprised. He picked Bilbo up and carried him out into the open air. It was midnight and the clouds had covered the stars, but Bilbo lay with his eyes shut, gasping and taking pleasure in the feel of the fresh air again and hardly noticing the excitement of the dwarves or how they praised him and patted him on the back and put themselves and all their families for generations to come at his service. The dwarves were still passing the cup from hand to hand and talking delightedly of the recovery of their treasure when suddenly a vast rumbling woke in the mountain underneath as if it was an old volcano that had made up its mind to start eruptions once again. The door behind them was pulled nearly to and blocked from closing with a stone, but up the long tunnel came the dreadful echoes from far down in the depths of a bellowing and a trampling that made the ground beneath them tremble. Then the dwarves forgot their joy and their confident boast of a moment before and cowered down in fright. Smaug was still to be reckoned with. It does not do to leave a live dragon out of your calculations if you live near them. Dragons may not have much real use for all their wealth, but they know it to announce as a rule, especially after long possession, and Smaug was no exception. He had passed from an uneasy dream in which a warrior altogether insignificant in size, but provided with a bitter sword and great courage, figured most unpleasantly, to a doze, and from a doze to a wide waking. There was a breath of strange air in his cave. Could there be a draught from that little hole? He had never felt quite happy about it, though it was so small, and now he glared at it in suspicion and wondered why he had never blocked it up. Of late, he had half fancied he had caught the dim echoes of a knocking sound from far above that came down through it to his lair. He stirred and stretched forth his neck to sniff. Then he missed the cup. Thieves, fire, murder. Such a thing had not happened since first he came to the mountain. His rage passes description, the sort of rage that is only seen when rich folk that have more than they can enjoy suddenly lose something that they have long had but have never before used or wanted. His fire belched forth, the hall smote, he shook the mountain roots. He thrust his head in vain at the little hole, and then coiling his length together, roaring like thunder underground, he sped from his deep lair through its great door, out into the huge passages of the mountain palace, and up towards the front gate. To hunt the whole mountain still, he had caught the thief and had torn and trampled him was his one thought. He issued from the gate, the waters rose in fierce whistling steam, and up he saw blazing into the air and settled on the mountain top in a spout of green and scarlet flame. The dwarves heard the awful rumour of his flight and they crouched against the walls of the grassy terrace, cringing under boulders, hoping somehow to escape the frightful eyes of the hunting dragon. There they would have all been killed if it had not been for Bilbo once again. "Quick, quick," he gasped, "the door, the tunnel, it's no good here." Roused by these words, they were just about to creep inside the tunnel when Biffa gave a cry. "My cousins, Bomba and Bofa, we have forgotten them. They're down in the valley. They will be slain and all our ponies too and all our stores lost," moaned the others. "We can do nothing." "Nonsense," says Thorin, recovering his dignity. "We cannot leave them. Get inside, Mr. Baggins and Barlin, and you two, Feely and Keely. The dragon shan't have all of us. Now you others, where are the ropes? Be quick." There were perhaps the worst moments they had been through yet. The horrible sounds of Smaug's anger were echoing in the stony hollows far above. At any moment he might come blazing down or fly whirling round and find them there, near the perilous cliff's edge, hauling madly up the ropes. Up came Bofa, and still all were safe. Up came Bomba, puffing and blowing while the ropes creaked, and still all were safe. Up came some tools and bundles of stores, and then the danger was upon them. A whirring noise was heard. A red light touched the points of standing rocks. The dragon came. They had barely time to fly back to the tunnel, pulling and dragging in their bundles, when Smaug came hurtling from the north, licking the mountain sides with flame, beating his great wings with a noise like a roaring wind. His hot breath shriveled the grass before the door and drove in through the crack they had left and scorched them as they lay hid. Flickering fires leapt up and black rock shadows danced. Then darkness fell as he passed again. The ponies screamed with terror, burst their ropes and galloped wildly off. The dragon swooped and turned to pursue them and was gone. "That will be the end of our poor beast," said Thorin. "Nothing can escape Smaug once he sees it. Here we are, and here we shall have to stay, unless anyone fancies tramping the long open miles back to the river with Smaug on the watch." It was not a pleasant or pleasing thought. They crept further down the tunnel, and there they lay, and shivered through it was warm and stuffy until dawn came pale through the crack of the door. Every now and again, through the night, they could hear the roar of the flying dragon grow and then pass and fade as he hunted down and round the mountain side. He guessed from the ponies and from the traces of the camps he had discovered that men had come up from the river and the lake and had scaled the mountainside from the valley where the ponies had been standing. But the door withstood his searching eye, and the little high-walled bay had kept out his fiercest flames. Long he had hunted in vain, till the dawn chilled his wrath and he went back to his golden couch to sleep and to gather new strength. He would not forget or forgive the theft, not if 1,000 years turned to smouldering stone, but he could afford to wait. Slow and silent, he crept back to his lair and half closed his eyes. When morning came, the terror of the dwarves grew less. They realised that dangers of this kind were inevitable in dealing with such a guardian, and that it was no good giving up their quest yet. Nor could they get away just now, as Thorin had pointed out. Their ponies were lost or killed, and they would have to wait some time before Smaug released and relaxed his watch sufficiently for them to dare the long way on foot. Luckily, they had saved enough of their stores to last them still for some time. They debated long on what was to be done, but they could think of no way of getting rid of Smaug, which had always been a weak point in their plans, as Bilbo felt inclined to point out. Then, as it is the nature of folk that are thoroughly perplexed, they began to grumble at the hobbit, blaming him for what had first so pleased them, for bringing away a cup and stirring up Smaug's wrath, and so soon. "What else do you suppose a burglar is to do?" asked Bilbo angrily. "I was not engaged to kill dragons, that is warrior's work, but to steal treasure. I made the best beginning I could. Did you expect me to trot back with a whole horde of thrall on my back? If there is any grumbling to be done, I think I might have a say. You ought to have brought 500 burglars, not one. I am sure it reflects great credit on your grandfather, but you cannot pretend that you ever made the vast extent of his wealth clear to me. I should want hundreds of years to bring it all up if I was 50 times as big and Smaug as tame as a rabbit." After that, of course, the dwarves begged his pardon. "What then do you propose we should do?" Mr. Baggins asked politely. "I have no idea at the moment. If you mean about removing the treasure, that obviously depends entirely on a new turn of luck and then the getting rid of Smaug. Getting rid of dragons is not all in my line, but I will do my best to think about it. Personally, I have no hopes at all, and I wish I was safe back at home." "Never mind that for the moment. What are we going to do now, today?" "Well, if you really want my advice, I should say we can do nothing but stay where we are. By day, we can no doubt creep out safely enough to take the air. Perhaps before long, one or two could be chosen to go back to the store by the river and replenish our supplies. But in the meanwhile, everyone ought to be well inside the tunnel by night. Now, I will make you an offer. I have got my ring and will creep down this very noon. Then, if ever Smaug ought to be napping and see what he is up to, perhaps something will turn up. Every worm has his weak spot, as my father used to say, though I'm sure it was not from personal experience. Naturally, the dwarves accepted the offer eagerly. Already, they had come to respect little Bilbo. Now he had to become the real leader in their adventure. He had begun to have ideas and plans of his own. When midday came, he got ready for another journey down into the mountain. He did not like it, of course, but it was not so bad now he knew more or less what was in front of him. Had he known more about dragons and their wily ways, he might have been more frightened and less hopeful of catching this one napping. The sun was shining when he started, but it was as dark as night in the tunnel. The light from the door, almost closed, soon faded as he went down. So silent was his going that smoke on a gentle wind could hardly have surpassed it, and he was inclined to feel a bit proud of himself as he drew nearer the lower door. There was only the faintest glow to be seen. Old Smaug is weary and asleep, he thought. He can't see me and he won't hear me. Cheer up, Bilbo. He had forgotten or never heard about dragon's sense of smell. It is also an awkward fact that they can keep half an eye open watching while they sleep if they are suspicious. Smaug certainly looked fast asleep, almost dead and dark, with scarcely a snore, more than a whiff of unseen steam, when Bilbo peeped once more from the entrance. He was just about to step out onto the floor when he caught a sudden thin and piercing ray of red from under the drooping lid of Smaug's left eye. He was only pretending to sleep. He was watching the tunnel entrance. Hurriedly, Bilbo stepped back and blessed the luck of his ring. Then Smaug spoke. Well, thief, I smell you and I feel your air. I hear your breath. Come along, help yourself again. There is plenty to spare. But Bilbo was not quite so unlearned in dragon lore as all that, and if Smaug hoped to get him to come nearer so easily, he was disappointed. No, thank you, O Smaug the Tremendous, he replied. I did not come for presents. I only wish to have a look at you and see if you were truly as great as tales say. I did not believe them. Do you now, said the dragon, somewhat flattered, even though he did not believe a word of it. Truly songs and tales fall utterly short of the reality. O Smaug, the chiefest and greatest of calamities, replied Bilbo. You have nice manners for a thief and a liar, said the dragon. You seem familiar with my name, but I don't seem to remember smelling you before. Who are you and where do you come from, may I ask? You may indeed. I come from under the hill and under the hills, and over the hills my paths led, and through the air I am he that walks unseen. So I can well believe, says Smell, but that is hardly your usual name. I am the clue finder, the web cutter, the stinging fly. I was chosen for the lucky number. Lovely title, sneered the dragon, but lucky numbers don't always come off. I am he that buries his friends alive and drowns them and draws them alive again from the water. I came from the end of a bag, but no bag went over me. Those don't sound so credible, scoffed Smaug. I am the friend of bears and the guest of eagles. I am ring winner and luck wearer, and I am barrel rider, went on Bilbo, beginning to be pleased with his riddling. That's better, says Smaug, but don't let your imagination run away with you. This was, of course, the way to talk to dragons if you don't want to reveal your proper name, which is wise, and don't want to infuriate them by a flat refusal, which is also very wise. No dragon can resist the fascination of riddling talk and of wasting time trying to understand it. There was a lot here which Smaug did not understand at all, though I expect you do, since you know all about Bilbo's adventures to which he was referring. But he thought he understood enough, and he chuckled in his wicked inside. I thought so last night, he smiled to himself. lake men, some nasty scheme of those miserable tub-trading lake men, or I'm a lizard. I haven't been down that way for an age and an age, but I will soon alter that. Very well, oh Barrel Rider, he said aloud. Maybe Barrel was your pony's name, and maybe not, though it was fat enough. You may walk unseen, but you did not walk all the way. Let me tell you, I ate 6 ponies last night, and I shall catch and eat all the others before long. In return for the excellent meal, I will give you 1 piece of advice for your good. Don't have more to do with dwarves than you can help. Dwarves, said Bilbo in pretended surprise. Don't talk to me, said Smaug. I know the smell and taste of dwarf. No one better. Don't tell me that I can eat a dwarf-ridden pony and not know it. You'll come to a bad end if you go with such friend, thief Barrel Rider. I don't mind if you go back and tell them so for me. But he did not tell Bilbo that there was one smell he could not make out at all. Hobbit smell. It was quite outside his experience and puzzled him mightily. I suppose you got a fair price for that cup last night, he went on. Come now, did you? Nothing at all? Well, that's just like them. And I suppose they are skulking outside and your job is to do all the dangerous work and get what you can when I'm not looking for them. And you will get a fair share? Don't you believe it. If you get off alive, you'll be lucky.